In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius
Makaiser. Well, I love experimenting with different kinds of journalism, different technologies. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we move on. And I think there's something about our generation, my generation, and generations younger than I am in, that are particularly prone to just playing around with all the different types of social media, other forms of media that are around. So this is in that vein that I am recording this episode of In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. One experiment you might have picked up on is that in recent times I have voiced articles I've written. That is after a friend of mine, Luandile, had said that he sometimes enjoys when he's in the car, simply listening to articles being read. You can imagine the joy of hearing a peer reading an article. Obviously, if you enjoy reading, as he does, he's one of my most well-read friends, he would read anyway. But if you have a choice between a podcast and music, your own thoughts, sometimes you might want to choose a podcast. And then you've got sub-choices. You have millions of podcasts now. I did not know that one of the sub-choices, until he alerted me that he enjoys, is hearing an author in their own voice of an essay, a long essay, simply reading it. Then you still get the content. And let's be honest, time is precious, and we don't have time to necessarily get to every book, let alone every article we've bookmarked. And so what I've done is I've now probably voiced about 5 articles I'd written, and I choose longer ones that are a little bit meaty, but not so long that I'm going to lose you with a hour-long speech. So they end up probably being about 10, 15 minutes of reading, which is just enough, I think, to get something out of it. So that's kind of worked quite well. What I want to try and experiment with now, in addition to that, is instead of simply reading stuff, I want to see whether I can also make short little entries on 1 or 2 questions that are top of mind, challenge you quickly, the way I used to do at the beginning of my open line on my radio shows. And it's a case of use it, don't use it, chew on it, go and debate the issues with someone else, you can come back to it. I already do so with political analysis, and it's very interesting. When Abel and I look at the stats, you seem to love it when I sometimes give my own opinion without a guest. I was worried that you would think that I'm being self-indulgent and that you would prefer only podcasts with many guests, but the numbers don't seem to suggest that. You seem to have no clear preference for whether it's a Eusebius-only entry or Eusebius with a guest entry. And in fact, some of the more popular ones have been when I've given a proverbial hot take on, let's say, for example, a Zuma judgment that has just been handed down. So that's just a long way of saying thank you, thank you, thank you for allowing me to experiment, for being generous and continuing being so interested in what I have to say about a range of things. Please do not stop DMing me with feedback, because that helps me to know what you don't like and what you'd like me to bring to the podcast platform. What am I going to focus on today? I want this to be a very short, snappy challenge for you to think about intentions and where intentions should fit in ethical and political discourse. In preparation for it, I scanned some of the philosophy literature that I had not thought about in a very long time. Some of you may know that I am a philosophy major. I studied legal theory and philosophy, and I was a philosophy graduate student. And so the one permanent feature of my journalism is that I try my darndest to remain true to the pressure of analytical philosophy to be as conceptually and definitionally as hygienic and tight and precise as possible when I speak. Even this morning when I was on, say, for example, Morning Live on SABC2 with Sakina Kamwendo. But the challenge, of course, is that if you are behaving like a graduate student, you're going to lose hundreds of thousands of people. On the other hand, if you don't do your own background any justice, then you're losing an opportunity to help a non-specialist to really improve on their own ability to think and speak philosophically. So let's see whether I can hit the sweet spot. What am I talking about when I'm talking about intentions? Simply put, if someone means well, what should I do with that if their action well-intended, are harmful? I struggled with that question for a long time. It is a question philosophers deal with in many branches of philosophy, and I don't want to bring the taxonomy of philosophy of mind, philosophy of action, philosophy of law into this conversation, because I really don't want to lose you as my listener. And when I scanned what has happened, you know, in the decade since I've been in the academy, it's very clear to me that some of the old classical debates in philosophy around the question of what is intention and what is the place of intention in relation to various applications of the concept, such as in law and in morality, those debates are raging and as complicated as ever. So I want to say something very simple by way of giving you my own view, and hopefully the expert will find it interesting. And if you are new to this, hopefully, even if you have to re-listen to this episode, you will find it intellectually stimulating and practically useful, not just intellectually stimulating. So here goes in terms of my own answer to the question. I've shifted on the question. I used to think that intentions obviously matter, and that intentions are a really important way of distinguishing the worst ethical behavior from behavior that may be ethically problematic, but less so than the worst behavior. And that good intentions should give you some discount, even if your actions were harmful. So let's say, for example, as a white feminist, you mean well, and you speak on behalf of all the women who are fighting patriarchy in your workplace, or at a conference that you are the one to put up your hand, always to be the rapporteur for the group in an outbreak session as a white woman. You may not intend to reproduce racist outcomes in the world, but the unintended consequence of you not thinking through your own positionality as a white woman in those spaces might be that you continue to be a part of the structures in the universe that render black women invisible, brown women invisible, and continue a kind of dominance of whiteness ideologically, even as a feminist. And so I kind of shifted because I thought to myself now, and it's interesting because I used to, one of my friends, if she's listening to this debate, we always used to fight about whether intentions matter. And she said, of course they don't matter. And I used to fight and say to her, you don't really believe that, Pumla. You just haven't thought through this properly. And I do my best to give examples from law and ethics of how intentions do have a place in morality and in interpersonal relations. And I'll come back to that. I still hold on to that belief. But where I needed to give more ground is that the effect of our behavior should be given greater weight than I had done earlier in my career as a public thinker and writer. And why now? And what made me suddenly come to this shift? Because it suddenly jumps out at me everywhere how many people who want to be woke as fuck, who want to be intersectional as fuck, when they are called out on the impact of their actions, their instinctive defense is to say, you are overreacting. That was not my intended action. That was not my motive. That is not what my intention was. I meant well. And I'm suddenly seeing that card being played everywhere, and there's almost a refusal to think through the harm of, obviously the harm doesn't have to be brutal harm, it's on a sliding scale, but there are many categories and kinds of harm that you can be implicated in even if your motive was pure or good or morally decent even. But the knee-jerk defensiveness is something that I suddenly see in spaces where you would thought otherwise are spaces that are a meeting place of people that have overlapping politics that are progressive substantively, and yet that often isn't the case. I encountered that online just today when a white woman academic that I love to bits used the same phrase, "We meant well." And I have no doubt she literally means that, and that that phrase is, in terms of its truth status, absolutely correct. In terms of, at a subjective level, what her intention was, in terms of her mental state, that was genuinely the content of her mental state. A pro or positive attitude towards me, but there's no consideration for why the hell, in turn, I felt slighted. The response to me expressing being slighted was to fall back on the Trump, "This is what my intention is." And I thought to myself, this is actually an excellent example of the debate I've had for years with Pumla about the place of intentions in discourse and interpersonal relationships and in politics. This is an excellent example of where someone refuses to continue the conversation in a critical manner about the impact of what they had been part of by simply saying my intention and our intention, even imputing intention to other members of the group that she had been a part of, was positive. And I think that that's a good example of why we should all think carefully about the limitations of the defense I meant well. Now, does that mean intentions do not matter? No, I still think that the basic point that I made in my ongoing debates that I used to have with Pumla is correct. And the classic example is, for example, you know, the difference between stepping on your toes unintentionally and deliberately doing so. If I'm doing it deliberately, there is malice on my part that surely is to be distinguished from doing so accidentally. If I'm getting a seizure and I happen to hit a baby as I am on the floor and the baby's crawling towards me and there's no one around, that is surely very different from me in a normal state, physically, willfully hitting a baby. And so we can use intentions to distinguish between willful action and, say, for example, action where it's not even clear that my action can be described as action, but rather as things that happen to my body even, such as when you have a seizure. Take a different example from law. Negligent behavior is treated very differently from, say, first-degree murder. And that's why we distinguish culpable homicide from other categories of harm, where there is a deliberate plan that I'm devising, a desire and a will that I have that finds expression in my intentional action to murder you as my partner. That is very different to me being extremely busy, leaving the gun lying around, and a child takes the gun and shoots themselves, and the law deemed me to have some degree of culpability through my negligent behavior. So I do think that intentions matter in a complicated way, in law, in ethics, in interpersonal relationships. But the basic point that I wanted to make in this entry, and that I want you to think through, is the limitations of the defense, "I meant well. I had good intentions." Do not use that as a way of stopping critical conversation about the harmful effects of your behavior. Why, in turn, does that matter? Just as a parting thought, so that this doesn't become longer than I promised it would be. Because actually, we need to start thinking about negative burdens we have and not just positive burdens. You should have thought through the consequences that were likely if you were to embark on certain kinds of action. And I think it's perfectly okay to hold each other ethically responsible for not thinking through the potential harm of what we're about to say or do. And when you block any critical discussion about the impact of your behavior by simply telling us that your intentions were pure, you are actually being disingenuous, because you are refusing to accept that you had sufficient agency to think before you act. And so sometimes the retort "That wasn't my intention," or "I had good intentions," or "I meant well," is actually a refusal to accept that you have agency and that you're responsible both for what you do and for what you fail to do and what you ought to have done.